So the point is that by buying the database of real license holders, he was able to then use a high quality forgery that actually was the license of a real individual. And I might add, this is a danger that all of us could face, because if you've got a license from almost any state in this country, then they sell off your driving record to anybody who wants to buy it. In fact, many of them sell the whole database off en masse to anybody who wants to buy it. The point is, if you're on the other end where you want to create a fake ID that you can drive under, this is a step you can take. First, go get a state's database of drivers, or you could be a clerk at a busy store, heck, at a hotel, right? You need a driver's license because yours is toast. When the people check in, they show ID, you find somebody whose general physical description, and that's all it has to be, is similar, then boom, you write that information down, then you don't even have to buy his driving record. You could then go put that data onto your high-quality counterfeit, and boom, you're driving and styling, okay? It's kind of like making a counterfeit credit card, except in this case, what you're stealing is his ability to drive a car, not his ability to charge merchandise. So this is the one way that you can actually use a fake ID that will pass a computer check. Now let's talk about other reasons that somebody may want to use a fake ID. I've written a piece that's in the current catalog supplement that we've got at the table at Loom Panics, and we've also reprinted the article. It's called The Tyranny of the Check Approval Services, The Scarlet Letter of the New Millennium. At my website, of course, you guys know I offer a consulting service for people that have identity, credit, and other similar problems. I get hundreds of inquiries over the course of every few months about, I can't open a bank account any place in the United States because of what happened, and they always call check systems or telecheck, and you know, it was 10 years ago or whatever. This is where the ability to have a high quality fake ID can help, because let's talk a bit about this. When you open up a bank account, a deposit account, we're not talking about credit in the traditional sense, but just a deposit account, generally the bank either calls, or now most of the time it's done online, they will check with telecheck or check systems and give them your name and license number or name and SSN. Now, if it comes back that there's negative data in their files, they say, I'm sorry, Mr. Jones, but well, we just don't like your kind. Of course, they won't say it that way. They'll just say, we really don't want your money. And you're like, well, what the hell is going on? Blah, blah, blah. Well, it's because you have the new scarlet letter of the new millennium, which is check approval services. These, anytime now, and beware of this, boy, you have an account closed, even, you know, because it was overdrawn for 30 days or more for $50. In the old days, it was just, you could pay it off eventually, and then you could open new accounts. Well, now, they've said, we're basically like credit bureaus, we're gonna keep this on file for 7 years, or even longer. So even if you pay it off, you may still not be able to open a new bank account. And of course, the banks say to you, well, it's not us, it's check systems. Okay, you know, that's like the murderer saying, well, it wasn't me, it was the gun. You know? So, getting a new driver's license a high-quality fake driver's license or a social security card can be a solution to the banking problem, because it can allow you to immediately go open a new bank account. It's to understand what they do and is not verified. The bank isn't actually verifying your license is real and been issued. What they are verifying is that the number is not in the database, the negative database of people that have had accounts closed for overdraft abuse. That's what they're verifying. Same way with the SSN. They're not verifying that your credit is good. What they're verifying is that that number has not been associated with someone who has abused check writing or savings account privileges and had an account closed because of overdraft abuse. Understanding that, for example, frequently my clients will say, okay, I want to open a new bank account, but like, what do I pick for the number on the driver's license or whatever? Well, what I say is pick a state that uses an SSN for the license number, then go look up and see what current SSNs are being issued, because they'll belong to just people that aren't in the banking system yet. Use that SSN and say that's your license number. And say your license is from Hawaii, you know, which is a state that uses the SSN as your license number. Guess what? They apply online and boom, the computer comes back saying, welcome to Big Ugly Internet Bank. Please send your initial deposit, blah, blah, blah. They're back in the banking system. That's one place a fake ID can help. The other place where high quality fake ID can help is you might set up a new credit history using the classic techniques of identity creation, which I talk about in my book, Reborn with Credit and Credit Power. The problem is now you've got a fistful of credit cards, but they're in a name that you have no ID in. Okay? This is where a high quality fake ID can be helpful, because now you have an ID to match the credit cards that you have now created under a new identity. So there can be a second ID. A high quality fake ID can also be used to allow you, if you just want to create a second bank account and a different name for privacy reasons, it can allow you to do so. So there could be many reasons that you actually want to get a fake ID. So the thing of it is that this is, like I said, what you have to be aware of. Now, let's talk about things like mail order birth certificates. You can order birth certificates by mail. There are a few places that sell them. Here's the caveat. If it's going to be a place that's not going to be shut down, they're not going to be state-issued birth certificates. They're going to be hospital birth certificates. Anybody can make a hospital birth certificate because it's not a government document that we're duplicating. So if I want to create hospital birth certificates or church baptismal certificates, I can make a high-quality document. I can make anything I want to and sell that, because they're not purporting to be from a government agency. Well, don't think our friends in the ID accepting business haven't realized that. Read the application for a U.S. passport. It says state, county, or city-issued birth certificate. Most DMVs now, if you read the literature carefully, it will say a U.S. or county-issued birth certificate. A few places will still accept hospital birth records, but the general tendency has been not to. Why, you might be curious, why did it get so bad like this? Well, you can thank the little town of Rio Rico, Texas. Back in 1970, they readjusted the border between the United States and Mexico. And to make a long story short, Rio Rico, which had previously been in Mexico, is now in Texas, which meant that anybody who had ever been born in Rio Rico, back to whenever Texas entered the Union, was technically an American citizen. Well, this is a little tiny village of maybe as many people in that section of the room. Mysteriously, 8,000 to 10,000 people applied for U.S. passports from Rio Rico. It was rather an amazing occurrence. I mean, it's like, wow, somebody finally at the passport agency in Houston noticed that, my God, wait a minute, I thought this was just a little town of one borough and a gas station. Well, no, it was like 10,000 people. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm from Rio Rico. See, here's my birth certificate from the, you know, clinic to whatever. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. Well, to make a long story short, the U.S. Passport Office is now the most adept agency at detecting fake ID. Okay? You don't only go for a passport, even if you've made a new identity and it's hardened, unless you have taken all the steps. Because if anybody will ferret you out, it will be the U.S. Passport Office. However, having said that, it's possible to get around them. Look, the watchwords of agencies that accept documents. Here's what you have to understand. Let's say I know that you, sir, are going to the DMV under the new identity, because you look like the kind that might need a new identity, under the new identity that you have set up to start over, because you've got 10 kids, you're tired of supporting them, and whatever, okay? Hey, I know about this guy, trust me. But so, in any case, you and I both know you're up to no good, right? So when you walk in there, I know you're up to no good. You know you're up to no good. But what you've got to understand is the clerks in that office don't know he's up to no good. You go to a DMV on any given day, and I challenge you to do this. You go and just stand around and you watch. The employees are underpaid, overfed, and bored as hell. It's the same thing. And so you see a birth certificate. Is this where you live? Is this your current address? Have you ever had a license before? Blah, 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 blah. All right, I'm going to lunch. And then after lunch, is this your birth certificate? Blah, 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 blah. Okay? It's the same damn thing. So the point I'm making here is of the 1,000 people they see that day, those people, 99.999% of them are there on legitimate business. They're not crooks. They're not particularly looking for crooks. So if you go in there with everything they say they have to have, unless you give them a reason to suspect that the documents you're showing them are not real, they're going to treat you as if you were any other customer. So it's two things. One, understand that. You will bring the suspicion on yourself based on how you act. If they ask you what your name is and you go, whatever, that's not a good sign. Okay? Or if they say, can you sign your name here, sir? And you're like, there we go. That's not a good sign. That sets off the warning bells because they're given some rudimentary training to tell them if the applicant is unsure when asked to state his full name, this may be an indication of identity fraud. I know, I've seen their training tape, okay? If the name on the documents the applicant presents does not match the name that he gives you, this could be a sign of identity fraud. That's like saying, if the man, while standing in line at the bank, pulls a gun up with a note, this could be an indication you're being robbed. It's very rudimentary. So the point is know your story, who you're saying you are and who you're going to be, so that when you go in there, you're not sweating, you're not dripping wet, your hands aren't shaking, okay? If you know this, that you will bring the suspicion on yourself. So if you understand that, guess what? They're not thinking everybody in here is a criminal. When my number comes up, they're not thinking criminal, 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 criminal. You are. They're not. Okay? Now, part two. Never underestimate their intelligence. This is the other thing. Although they are bored, underpaid, and overfed, they are not totally stupid. Because they've got a damn good retirement plan, probably better than most of us in here. Okay? So, the point of it is, they're working that job because they want that job, even though it's boring as hell. They don't ever get laid off. I don't know if you've noticed that. In any case, the point of it is, so don't go in there with documents you know your grandmother wouldn't believe. Okay? I have seen this happen. It's like, oh, well, I'll go in here with this. And it's like, well, sir, I don't understand. It looks like your birth certificate was filled out in pencil. Or, well, sir, I don't know. If according to this, you were born in 1947, but your mother was born in 1960. That makes no sense, sir. I have seen and heard it all. That's the guy who they're like, oh, could you please wait here? And the next time he opens the door, it's with bars on it, and 5 years later, he's free again, okay? Never underestimate their intelligence. Here's the thing. When you're using, you know what kind of fake ID you can and can't use. You can use what I call foundation documents. Foundation documents are the documents that allow us to get the ID we use on an operational basis, on a daily basis in the United States. For example, a foundation document is a birth certificate, a baptismal certificate, social security card can be considered to be a foundation document, a college transcript. Those are foundation documents. High quality forgeries of foundation documents will almost always allow you to penetrate the identification system and get real things like licenses, passports, that kind of stuff. You never, ever use a fake state ID card or driver's license at a DMV because they can verify its issuance on the computer. So foundation documents are fine to use to as forgeries to build the real identity documents. Now, there may be a time between when you're creating the new identity and leaving the old one where you need to use, like I say, a fake driver's license to open a bank account, because then that will give you a credit card, an ATM debit card on that account. That's now a piece of real ID that will verify. The goal is to use the fake ID in a gradual process to migrate into a new identity where all of the documents are real. So let me conclude the first part of this on the fake ID by mail and modem by saying that's the kind of thing I cover in this book. Other things I cover in this book are like, okay, there's some good cards to use. Like, for example, you picked out a new name and birth date for yourself. You can buy a press card from a real press service. Nobody needs, no, it's not Newsweek, no. But the point is, it'll actually verify. They can actually call or write the press service, and it'll verify. It's okay. You can use some of the techniques talked about in here. There's a company that will custom make high-quality PVC corporate ID cards for you. There's no reason, and you guys, as computer literate as you are, you set up a corporate website, address, telephone numbers, you make your own ID cards to go with it. That's now a supportive form of ID. Here's the thing to know when dealing with government agencies. Find out what they'll take. In general, government agencies operate on two systems. Either they'll say, we require this document, or some of them say, we operate on an ID point system where you have to have 70 ID points, and that's acceptable for us to issue you what you want. And then there might be a whole bunch of different documents they take, like in Ohio, oh my God, to get a license, man, they'll take a college transcript, they'll take this, they'll take that, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's like this long. And they think this makes their system more secure. In reality, it makes it easier to penetrate because they're taking so many different kinds of things that there's no way that their people can know what all of those things look like at any given time. So if you go in there with high-quality forgeries, you probably walk out with what you want. And that brings us to the second thing that I wanted to talk about, which is the ID forger. I saw that there was a lack of a book that could teach somebody who doesn't know a whole lot about computers, such as myself, hey, I want to make a birth certificate or a transcript or whatever that is so good I can take it to a DMV or the passport office and it will pass scrutiny. That's what this book is about. This book primarily is about how to make those kind of foundation documents. First, I'll talk about the birth certificate because that's a critical document to have. Okay, here's the deal on birth certificates. In the United States, there's 50 states and, about 6 territories. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, American Samoa, are there any more? Heck, I don't know. That lets you see what I know. In any case, in this country, there are 7,000 offices that can issue birth records at the government level. In fact, there's always, and here's how it breaks down, in every state there is the State Central Vital Statistics Bureau. That state acts as a collating center where all counties forward birth records after somebody is born and the birth is registered in a county to that agency. So you can always get a copy of a birth certificate for anyone anywhere in that state from the State Central Vital Statistics Bureau. In most states, the county registrar also issues birth certificates for people who were born in that county. So at a minimum, most people can get their birth certificate at 2 different locations, and they will look different very frequently. A certificate from the state, but sometimes it's the reverse of this, will be on much more ornate paper with more security features, whatever. Frequently, the certificate from the county will just be a white sheet of paper, even a half-size sheet of paper, and that kind of thing. Finally, many cities like Cincinnati, a few others, New York City, still have city registrars where anybody born in the city limits of that particular city can get their certificate from the city health department. So those are the 3 different agencies in the United States that issue certificates. For those of you in Canada, Canada has had a centralized birth certificate issuance process for almost 50 years. In Canada, all certificates are issued by the provincial government. And then Quebec, that started in 1994. Up to that time in Quebec and New Brunswick, birth certificates were primarily registered by the Catholic Church, and that's why baptismal records are still accepted if you were born in one of those provinces of Canada as proof of birth. But Canada, in the main now, it's a centralized birth certificate issuance process. All Canadian birth certificates look essentially the same except minor variations, and that was by design. But the United States is a completely different situation. So let's say you decide, I want to make a fake birth certificate. Well, once again, in this business, the devil is in the details. I do not know how many times I have told clients who have paid me much money to advise them this. I'm just checking the time here. I've told clients who have paid me much money this, and I'll talk about the details on a birth certificate. Those numbers on the birth certificate aren't just mumbo jumbo, okay? They really aren't. There's a numbering sequence, and let me talk about how that is decided. Every 10 years, a vital statistics working group meets in this country, and they decide this is what we would like to see most countries' birth certificates, most states' birth certificates look like. The reason you'll notice, if you talk to people and say, hey, can I see your birth certificate, blah, 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 a lot of them, maybe over half of them, will have the same general outlook. And this is what's called the U.S. Standard Certificate of Birth. This is what a blank U.S. Standard Certificate of Birth looks like here in the book. This book is available over at the Lumpanics table in case you don't see it here. This is a standard U.S. Standard blank birth certificate body. If the federal government could have its way, all states would use this as the body copy for their birth certificate. Now, not all states do, but most use this or a very close variation. There's certain information that is on all of them. The numbering is at the same place on all of them, that kind of stuff. So, step one, if you're going to forge a birth certificate, go with the flow, okay? Think about it. I'm Mr. Snoopy DMV clerk. What do I see hundreds of every week? This. So don't go in there with a birth certificate that looks much different. Go in with one that looks like this. Then you look like you're everybody else. Remember, the whole point of the ID changing business is to blend in. This is not for iconoclast. The whole point is to blend in, get what you want, then go home and laugh at those assholes because guess what? Your computer says I'm James Bond. Okay? But to get there, you gotta go with the flow. This lets you go with the flow. Okay? That's number one. So, know what the document is that's most popular looks like. Make sure your document looks pretty much like it. Okay? Now, the next thing is the numbers on birth certificates. There's two types of numbers on birth certificates. When you were born, the registrar of the county has a registrar's file number. That's generally a 2 to 4 digit number, and it's usually just the year that you were born and whatever number of the birth you were in that particular county. Sometimes it's not even that. It's very frequently just a 2-digit or 4-digit number. It doesn't have a whole lot of significance. The 2 digits might be the number for that particular district in the state, and then the other 2 digits are the birth or your order of birth for that month or whatever. The real important number on the birth certificate is the state birth number, okay? That's that number up on the side, and it'll be like 124-such-such-such-such. This is where I have seen more identity changers wind up in the pokey than I'd like to talk about, even though they make absolutely wonderful documents. This is the difference between the tech smarts and the street smarts. Let's talk about that numbering system. Once again, this numbering system was created by that vital statistics working group I told you about that meets every 10 years. The first group of three numbers is the first digit of that group of three numbers is always a 1. That means the person was born in the United States. I know it seems kind of redundant, but look, that's bureaucrats for you. Okay, I mean, we're talking about American birth certificates. Like, well, damn, I guess so. You know, Missouri is in America, but, you know, maybe they figure somebody don't know that. In any case, so the first number is always going to be a 1. So right there, you go to Miss Snoopy DMV clerk with your Missouri birth certificate, and the first digit is a 6 on your birth certificate. They know right away, wait a minute, this is baloney. Okay? It's got to be a 1 if it's a state birth number. Okay. The next two digits are the state number. These are just generally is a goes by alphabetical listing with the exception of Alaska and Hawaii because they came into the union later. So for Missouri, which is the example we're using, that number is 24. Okay? Because if you go through and do alphabetically, Missouri is about the 24th state. Once again, check this out. If you're making a certificate, excuse me, that says you were born in Ohio, then get a surreal certificate from Ohio and make sure that you get the number right. Because if you go there and your Ohio birth certificate says 150, right away Snoopy Clerk might be, well, wait a minute, I know, I remember from that training film that it said these numbers are in approximately alphabetical order, blah, 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 and there's just no way Ohio does not come before Washington. Okay, know this. Know before you go, okay, people? This is the whole point. Finally, there's a comma, or there's a dash mark. The next two letters, the next two numbers are the year of birth. Of course, now that we're in the new millennium, there may be 4 because we've got to allow things to roll over. If it's 2 digits, that's going to be your year of birth in the 1900s. So somebody born in 1967 in Missouri, the first 5 digits on their state-issue birth certificate. 1, born in the United States. 24, born in Missouri. -67, born in 1967. Okay. The last 6 digits will be the sequential birth number. Now, it won't be the exact time you were born in the state, but it will be when they registered you into the central database. Okay, let me explain this. One time when I was doing research to find out on what different states' birth certificates look like, I was like, okay, how am I going to find somebody who was born in Georgia or wherever? And then I realized, you know what? Every newspaper covers the first baby born of the year, don't they? And they give the name of the parents and the mother's maiden name, and because, you know, the baby gets little gifts and whatever. So I went around to all the big city newspapers, and I read the story on January 2nd about the first baby born. And that's when I was able then to build up my little file of birth certificates. Well, guess what? The first baby born, for example, in Georgia, in a year I will not disclose, of course, her number, or let's say in Missouri, the first baby born that year, the state birth number would be 124-67-00001. The baby who got born after her, 000002. Okay, you see where I'm going with this? Now, oh, shut up. In any case, the point of it is, when you're making this number up, if you want to make sure that you don't accidentally make a number that actually could belong to somebody, now this is what I mean by knowing what bureaucrats know and don't know. If I make a number from Missouri and I say, well, I was 124-67-085996, I can tell you something. In Missouri in 1967, there was not 96,026 babies born. But by picking a number that's on that high end of the range, I guarantee that that birth certificate number isn't in any database because it doesn't really exist. But the form of the number is plausible. The form of the number makes sense. You'll have no trouble putting that birth certificate into using it to get things because in general, things are not indexed by birth certificate number anyway. Yeah, I'll take your question. Yeah. No, because they won't notice that. What they'll look at is that, okay, this numbering sequence makes sense. And then the other thing is, make it so you were born at the end of the year. Remember, you're creating the ID. That's up to you. He's asking me, well, wouldn't somebody notice if you were born in January that the number is high? My point of it is, you don't have to necessarily make it you were born in January. I'm using that as an example to let you see that when you make the number up, the form of the number should agree to the form of the number on a real certificate. Just make it so that the birth number is high enough that there's no chance in hell that you'll actually cross in a database that you're trying to get into with somebody with the actual number. Now, I can tell you, as a practical matter, most states do not even put the birth certificate number into the file. They'll usually just check that it was a state birth certificate. Those that do put it in the file, the number is not used as a file identification or retrieval tool. It's usually just entered in as the file, but it's not used to actually segregate, identify, and retrieve the file. The birth certificate number is not used to do that. Yes. No, she's asking me, do they verify the birth certificate with the state of issuance? And this brings me to a point. Government agencies are taught, you go to a DMV office, and in that office during the day's work, they may see as many people that are in this room. They don't have time to verify every birth certificate that's sent in front of them. So the watchwords are, if the documents appear to be authentic, and the person presenting them is credible, you accept them. And this is my whole point on understanding how you can use documents to get what you want. Yeah, I'll take your question. I'm about to get to that. Okay, so now we've talked about the numbering sequence. This man's saying, well, what about embossed seals? Once again, this is where so many people in identity changing, they don't do all their homework. It's like they'll go to a DMV with a great-looking birth certificate, and there's no embossed seal. And that looks odd. It's like, well, we know that they always put an embossed seal on it if it's a certified copy. How do I get embossed seals? Well, there's a company called NIC, and they sell state embossers from almost every state. Now, you're wondering, how can they do this? Well, the state seal in most states is in the public domain. There is nothing to prevent all of you, after I'm done talking, from running to Office Max or Staples with a drawing of your state seal and ordering them to make you an embosser with that state seal. In fact, I implore you, go do it right now. Okay? So, the point of it is, the state seal is not private property. It belongs to the people. So, you buy an embosser that has the state seal on it. Now, here's where you have to be careful. A birth certificate issued from the State Vital Statistics Bureau will always have the seal of the state on it. But a birth certificate that comes from the county will usually have a county seal. In a few cases, it may have a county and a state seal, but almost always a county-issued certificate is going to have the county seal, because what does the embossment say? The embossment is the certification that it is a accurate and true copy of what is on file, that the record is legitimate. That's what that embossed seal over the signature usually, that's what it actually means. That's why everybody wants to see, is there an embossed seal? Now, like I said, NIC, they sell embossers. Now, the government isn't completely stupid. The passport office, they actually look at the seal. So if you go to the passport office with a state-issued birth certificate, but you have a county seal on it, then you're gonna get checked out. Because they look at stuff like that. In fact, if you look at a U.S. passport application, you'll see at the bottom, there's little boxes and it says SR, CR, or city. That stands for, was it a state registrar, Vital Statistics Bureau, CR, county registrar, county statistics bureau, or city. And then they write down the certificate numbers. In general, the birth certificate is not verified if everything else is in order. However, if there are any questions, they have authorization to verify. So that is the reason, like I said, agencies operate on the premise that 99.99% of the people coming here are honest. So if the documents are appear to be authentic or whatever, then we give them what they want. Otherwise, the whole system would grind to a halt. So that is the thing about certification. Now, understand that there is a difference between document certification and document notarization. A notary seal on a document means it is simply a true copy of the original, but it does not attest to the accuracy of the information on the document. That's why you'll notice places say they want a certified copy, not a notarized copy. A certified copy says that not only is this a true copy of what's in the record, but that the record itself is a legitimate, accurate record. That's why they want certified copies. Now, you can also buy little things from NIC, like a red thing that says certified copy. Red ink is very good because that lets people know that it's not a copy. If they see the red ink, and I can tell you, it makes bureaucrats just their knees wobble. You walk in there with a fake birth certificate, and it says certified copy and red ink across it. They're like, oh, it must be genuine. Here, okay? You can buy a stamp that says certified copy from NIC. You could also go get one from an office supply store. You can buy your own kit and make your own. Another thing that makes bureaucrats' knees wobble is when you get something that says copying prohibited and nice big red letters. Oh, I put one of those on a birth certificate, and I think they had an orgasm right there. They were like, oh, yes. Send this man to the head of the line, okay? So things like this are important. Finally, you make sure your document doesn't look too good, and this is what I'm talking about. For example, if you make a baptismal certificate, when do you get a baptismal certificate? You get it when you get baptized. Most people are baptized at usually a young age. So if I walk into a DMV office and I'm saying I'm 30, and I'm like, well, here's my baptismal certificate, and it looks like it came out yesterday, but I was supposed to have gotten it back in 1970, I guarantee you there's some questions that are going to be asked, especially if there's a little copyright notice on it that says copyright 1985. On the sheet. In other words, a baptismal certificate should be old, crumply. It should look like it's been around. I talk about in many of my books on new ID and the ID forger and some of the others out there how to age documents using such common household items as iced tea and coffee. And you can age documents very, very well. A document's age should always look appropriate for its age. A birth certificate that you supposedly got back in 1970 should not look like you got it yesterday. Okay? Other thing, learn to keep things like date stampers, because of course now we're in year 2000. Those date stampers you have from 1990, 91, 88 can be very useful because it can allow you to stamp an old date on a document. Remember things like that? Okay? These are all very important things. Okay? So, basically, I will tell you, this book covers how to make these documents. Because there's two ways to forge. There's the old-fashioned way using whiteout, photocopies, light table, paste up. I cover that. I also cover things on forging. For example, if your scanner can only scan at 300 DPI, it doesn't matter that you've got a 1200 by 1200 DPI printer because you can't print what ain't on the image. So I talk about stuff like this, that when you have to need a high-res scanner, you also want a very high-resolution printer. I talk about the minimum system requirements. Now, remember, this book, you know, a year ago I did the research, so, of course, technology has sped up. But the parts about computer forgery on birth certificates and such is written at a level that if you just have rudimentary computer knowledge, as you guys know I do, you can read this and then go out and buy the things and then start turning out good copies. The thing of it is that if you can make good foundation documents, birth certificates, college transcripts, even things like social security cards, whatever, you can penetrate the identification system and you can get almost any real document that you want to get. And that's what I wanted to touch on. And this is an excellent guide to doing that. Before I take questions and then go, the other thing that I wanted to ask you is that, look, I have a sign-up sheet for the book I mentioned yesterday. If you sign up with your name and email, when it comes out, you get 20% off. I also would like it if there's somebody here from in the military who would not mind me having a making a copy of a current military or dependent ID. No. Listen, you guys. Hey, hang on. Listen. You guys have dealt with me long enough to know that want two things. Unless you tell me you're going to blow up a building or commit mass murder, anything you say to me or give to me stays with me. I'm trying to build up a database on different identity documents and birth certificates. Anybody who helps me on that, I guarantee you two things. You'll get your document back because all I want to do is scan it, wipe the data off of it, and then you have your document back. If you're not comfortable with doing that here, drop me an email, and I'd be more than willing to make it worth your while in the form of a book or a free consult on something, that kind of thing. The other thing is, once again, I'm looking for an expert on internet privacy. I'm willing to work with more than one person on for different aspects of that chapter. In any case, I'll take some questions and then until the goons run me off. You. Okay, fingerprints. What I say, if you don't have to give them, don't. There is no, very little regulation of what happens. He asked me about fingerprints. Some states take thumbprints for licenses, whatever. My own feeling is you should avoid those because later, if for some reason you need to create a new identity or want to, that can cause you problems. Do not give away your biometrics unless you're forced to, like you're arrested, or there is a valid reason for it. There is no reason that a man or woman should have to be fingerprinted, which a thumbprint is, for a damn driver's license. Okay? There is no reason. If we stop agreeing to that, it'll stop happening. In fact, the people of Alabama rejected fingerprinting and biometrics on their licenses, so their people can stop this from spreading further. You. Okay, he's asking me, are some of the official papers that the government use have watermarks? The answer is some do, but I can tell you, you can get most of the paper that the government uses, that different states use. You can find it at a place like Kinko's or a stationery store, to be honest with you. You can duplicate pretty much what they do, because they want to spend as little money as possible. Yeah, you. Holograms. Well, I'd leave that to... There are some fake ID sellers now that can do the holograms. If you're interested specifically in doing holograms, like on driver's licenses, supposedly the Alps printer can do those. We have a book out there called How to Make Driver's Licenses on the Home Computer. I would recommend that book for that specifically. Yeah. He's talking about the holograms. And there was a company when I did the research for fake ID by mail and modem that would sell you the holograms. I'm not sure if they're still in business, but this is one of those things. If you know of a place, please email me because I try to stay current on this and I'll put it out on my website. You. Oh, okay. He's asking me about death certificates. Believe it or not, some people have actually used a official death certificate to get new ID. Okay. In any case, death certificates were useful if you're creating a new identity by the classic dead infant method or dead baby method, where you find the identity of a child who died at a young age before they got much ID. The reason I say you should not use that method anymore is because if you can find out about that unfortunate youth, how do you know somebody else won't later? And then it's not like you can complain that somebody else is using your identity, and I say that in parentheses. So do not use that method anymore. Yeah, you know what? I say no, because the thing is, if there's any question as to whether, he's saying, what about filing like false death certificate and this kind of stuff to kill yourself off? I say do not do that, because if there is a scintilla of question whether or not this happened, this will open a police file. The best thing to do is on a given day, I call it the D-Day, you walk from your old life into the new life. And if there's no connection between the two, then eventually the old life dies its own thing. One author suggests leaving your credit cards at a bus station. giving them a workout. I highly agree with that. Yeah, you. Yeah. I would never do that. What I would say is that continue to maintain, to cash your paycheck for cash, then make the deposit. What he's asking is that what would happen if you're working under the old identity, you have a bank account in the new identity, and you deposit your paycheck into the new identity's bank account. The short and simple answer is don't, because now you're creating a link. And as I talked about yesterday, banks keep records of that for 5 years of which you put in that account. Never, ever do that. Because then that's a direct link between the new and old you, a link that will stay there for a long time, and that's hard to refute. You. Well, I would say this. He's asking how much cash can you move around? You mean like physically or transfer from accounts or what? Well, here's the deal. Never do more than $3,000 in cash or bearer instruments, because by law they will have to file a currency transaction report, and that will get you definite attention, even though most of these reports are for nothing but legitimate transactions. And the thing of it is that it's easy to avoid making those mistakes. How much? In fact, he told us $2,999, so keep that in mind. Those of you with deep pockets, $2,999 in bearer instruments or cash. Bearer instruments are things like traveler's checks, money orders, or cash. Hang on, I already took one from you. Oh, so make it, let's put it this way. Me, I would make it no more than $800, okay? I like $800. That's a nice number, okay? You back there. Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you something. With the fake ID, never ever show something to a cop or law enforcement official that's not completely valid and on the level. And I'll give you an example. I have a client who I'm advising. He's from the UK. And he bought one of these international driver's licenses from a company in Honduras. And he thought this was a valid document. I said, no. I said, an IDL is only valid with the valid license from the country you're supposed to be from. You get pulled over and say, well, here's my Honduran driver's license, and this guy is white and from Europe, it's going to be like, well, where's your license from Honduras? Doesn't have one. His UK license, his British license, is still valid. I told him, you need to be driving with that. I said, thank God you retained me now, because, man, you might have been calling me from a jail cell. So the thing of it is that, no, never show to anybody in law enforcement anything that you wouldn't be comfortable showing your own mother, okay? That's my watchword on that. Am I getting kicked off of here? Well, the man has come, and as you can see, he's a lot taller than me, so I'm going to do what he tells me to do. Thank you. I will be at the... Thank you a lot. I'll be at the Lympanics table if you've got any questions.